Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the November 10th, 2025 meeting of the Madison Landmarks Commission. First up is our approval of the minutes from our last meeting on October 6th, 2025. Do I have a motion?
Motion to approve.
Again.
I am going to
Recuse myself because I was not at the meeting.
Oh, thank you, Edna. I am going to assume unanimous consent because it looks like Molly is here now too. So we will move on to public comment. This is the portion of the agenda in which members of the public may comment on an item that is not on our current agenda. Looking at this, we do have Kurt Staggy registered, neither in support or opposition wishing to speak. I see Kurt is here. Kurt, did you want to, were you meaning to register for agenda item?
No, this is
Nope.
the item. This is the item I want to register for.
Okay,
Number
excellent.
one.
Please go ahead.
Okay, commissioners, my name is Kurt Stege. I'm appearing before you today as an individual rather than as a representative of a group. I'm here to draw your attention to two things. To one of the duties of this commission that is enumerated in your ordinance. And the second thing is to draw your attention to a proposed ordinance change that relates to your enumerated duty. First, I'd like to draw your attention to section 33.19 sub 2 sub H of the Madison General Ordinance. It provides, in relevant part, the Landmarks Commission shall review proposed ordinances affecting historic preservation and make recommendations to the Common Council. Second, I draw your attention to Legistar File 90552 relating to the Transit-Oriented Development or TOD Overlay District. The drafter's analysis for that legislative proposal includes the following sentence, quote, "This proposal allows four dwelling units to be permitted throughout the TOD overlay district." End quote. On October 28th, the Common Council referred the proposal to both the Housing Policy Committee and the Plan Commission for comment. I do not believe the proposal has been referred to the Landmarks Commission. Irrespective of the language of section 33.19 sub 2 sub H, and I stand corrected if someone can correct me. Despite staff recommendations to the contrary, the TOD overlay districts fail to recognize local landmark districts, National Register structures, or National Register historic districts. I and quite a few other persons oppose this failure to recognize the significance of historic preservation. But historic structures are not recognized, that is, they are ignored in the TOD overlay district. The Landmarks Commission's review for certificates of approval give the Commission the discretion to overcome the new four dwelling unit norm for projects within a local historic district. However, the National Register historic districts have no such protection. Madison has five local historic districts, but there are 19 National Register historic districts within the city. Seven of those 19 are at least partially within the TOD overlay district. The overlay district actually cuts through the University Hill Farms National Register Historic District. About 400 lots in that Hill Farms district would be affected by the proposed ordinance change. The remaining six National Register Historic Districts have nearly another 400 lots that would be similarly affected. Please exercise your duty under section 33.19 sub 2 sub H of the Madison General Ordinance. Thank you.
you, Kurt. Lauren, I am gonna throw it back to you in a second, but Mary Rose, can you please pass that on to Heather and I guess have her kind of give us an update on that the next time we meet?
Absolutely, I can.
Excellent, thank you. And I'm sorry, I was supposed to pass it to Lauren to discuss processes and procedures for tonight's meeting. Lauren.
Landmarks Commission members, please use video if you're able so we can ensure we have quorum. If you wish to speak, remember to use the raise hand feature. Also use the raise hand feature to make a motion or second. Voting will be considered unanimous. However, if you object to a unanimous vote, please use the raise hand feature when the chair asks for objections and a roll call vote will be taken. Members of the public who have registered to speak, the name you entered in Zoom must match the name you entered in registration. You will remain muted until called upon. You will have 3 minutes to speak and staff will tell you when your time is up. Please do not use your video. If you turn on your video, it will be shut off. Chair, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Lauren. Continuing on with our agenda, the next on the agenda is disclosures and recusals. Members of the body should make any required disclosures or recusals under the city's ethics code. Does anyone have anything to disclose or recuse themselves from? Seeing none, it is the practice of the Landmarks Commission to approve a consent agenda. This includes items that are removed from the agenda to be voted on as a group on which staff believes an application has had sufficient review towards approval with all the conditions placed upon it, the applicant accepts those conditions, and there are no individuals who are registered to speak in opposition to the item. The consent agenda is addressed at the beginning of the meeting to allow applicants and registrants to leave the meeting unless a member of the commission requests separation, and then that agenda item is placed back on the agenda and reviewed as part of the regular course of business. The following are proposed for the consent agenda. So this is agenda item number three, Legistar file 90449, agenda item number four, agenda item number five, agenda item number six, and agenda item number seven. Do I have a motion?
Motion to approve.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Oop.
Oh.
Molly, go ahead. Are you seconding or are you requesting a separation?
I think we should separate number seven. But if we have to vote on the motion, I guess.
Yes, I think we do have to vote on the motion first. Or I believe the person who made the motion can remove, can ask for pulling it.
I'm happy to have number seven pulled if that's the will of the body.
Okay. I would say that you have amended your motion to approve agenda items 3 through 6 and to separate agenda item number 7 and put it back on the agenda. Correct, Alder Duncan?
That's correct.
Excellent. So then I'm looking for a second.
I'll second.
Thank you, Molly. I saw your hand first.
Oh.
Okay, excellent. Then agenda items 3 through 6 are approved and moving forward, but we are putting agenda item number 7 back on the agenda. So then we'll move on to our regular agenda, which is agenda item number 2, Legistar file 90011. This is 425 North Francis Street and 450 West Gilman Street. This is an advisory recommendation for development adjacent to a designated Madison landmark. Mary Rose, do you want me to hand it over to you first, or would you like me to go to the registrants first?
That's up to you, Chair. If you would prefer to start with registrants, you may. I think I'm flexible.
Oh, let's start with you first, and then we'll go to the registrants.
Okay, absolutely. Hi, everybody. It's been a while since I've attended one of these meetings. I am sitting in on behalf of Preservation Planner Heather Bailey today. And so tonight, as Katie, as chair, has explained, we are discussing a development proposal for 425 North Francis Street and 450 West Gilman Street. You did see this proposed development for an informational back in September, so it may look familiar. The proposal is to construct a new multi-unit residential structure that is 16 stories tall, adjacent to the landmarked Grimm Bookbindery, which was constructed in 1926. And the informational presentation to the Landmarks Commission was at your September 15th meeting. And this is an advisory recommendation that will your comments will be provided to the Urban Design Commission and to the Plan Commission. And here are some mock-ups of the massing of the building, and you can see some of the setbacks and stepbacks that Heather called out in the staff report, which provide a little bit of breathing room between the landmark building and the proposed development site, and create a similar scale and height along the Gilman Street facade with this wing structure that serves as the entrance to the parking garage there. So here's a rendering where you can see that Gilman Street facade. Note the design of the parking entrance structure here, which Heather called out in the staff report and had some questions about, but you can see the intention here to have a similar height as the Grimm Bookbindery at this point, and then it steps up into different heights in both along the street front and back towards Francis Street. And here's another rendering for a slightly different angle. And this is the Francis Street side, where you can see there is a little bit less of a step back on the backside along Francis Street here. Here are some of the materials that are proposed for the building, which are new, were not included in your massing presentation from September. And here is the relevant ordinance that you are reviewing under tonight. So the Landmarks Commission's role is to determine whether the proposed development is so large or visually intrusive as to adversely affect the historic character and integrity of the adjoining landmark site. And Heather's staff report clearly noted that the incorporation of the setbacks and stepbacks does help keep the development away from the historic landmark site, but noted that specifically along the Gilman Street facade, the design of the garage door entrance is too opaque and too industrial and does not read as a commercial storefront, which would have historically been within the context of this site. And recommended that there be a modification to this design, such as a glass panel garage door or something that would work within the context of the development design while also better complementing the history of the site as a commercial storefront and working more in line with the adjacent landmark site of the Grimm Bookbindery. So the staff recommendation is that the Landmarks Commission advise the Plan Commission and Urban Design Commission that due to the side setback and substantial step back from the single story wing of the building, that the proposed work will not be so large or visually so large or visually intrusive as to adversely affect the historic character and integrity of the adjoining landmark. However, staff recommends that the Landmarks Commission recommend a less industrial and closed character of the exterior materials of the single story wing that parking garage entrance to increase the street level activation so it is not so visually intrusive as to adversely affect the historic character and integrity of the adjacent landmark.
Thank you, Mary Rose. Can we actually keep the recommendation up on the screen just for our discussion in a couple of minutes? And before I go to the registrants, does anyone have any questions for Mary Rose before I move on to the registrants? Okay, seeing none, looks like we have two registrants. The first is Rebecca Anderson, registered in opposition, wishing to speak. And I see that she is online. Rebecca, are you ready to speak?
They're on their phone. Maybe they need help unmuting.
Rebecca, I think if you do a star six, that's the way to unmute on a telephone. Otherwise, I will note Rebecca did email in comments right before the meeting that were sent to the commission.
Thank you, Lauren. Rebecca, I believe I am going to move on to the second registrant at this time, just to kind of continue the meeting. However, we will come back to you after that person. So hopefully we can get your sound working. Unfortunately, I think one thing that I would recommend is potentially leaving the meeting and coming back and seeing if that will help. So I will move on to the next registrant, but I will come back to you. And so then next up, we have Brian Munson, registered in support, wishing to speak. Brian, I believe you are on also.
Yes, good evening, everyone. Brian Munson with Vandewall Associates, here on behalf of Villa Student Housing as kind of a follow-up to our discussions back in September. And just to give a little background, since that meeting, we've been to the Urban Design Commission, had a neighborhood meeting, had numerous staff discussions leading to our October 6th submittal for the demolition request for the site, as well as, in this case, the appropriateness and the transition in the design adjacent to the Grimm Bookbindery. So as we recall back in September, that really was taken to heart. We wanted to make sure that this project stepped back away from the massing on the first floor of the Grimm Bookbindery, but also presented a activated streetscape and continued the vibrancy of Gilman Street along this stretch. So a couple of things have been incorporated into the project. Of course, first and foremost, as you saw, the material selections have been in greater detail, which help us kind of create the character of the overall building. We have continued to carry that design intent and massing of stepping back along the first floor along Gilman and then stepping up closer to the hub, kind of pushing that height back. And this area is designated in the comprehensive plan for up to 12 stories. We achieved the 16 stories while still meeting the 12-story height definition through incorporation of affordable housing. Another piece that we've done really, again, focused on that activated streetscape. Unlike the first submittal that you saw where we had commercial and the lobby along Francis Street, we've now separated the two. We still have a lobby along the entire frontage on the first floor on Francis to activate that streetscape. But now we've moved the commercial over to Gilman Street to give not just windows into the building, but activated use along that streetscape. So kind of continuing the character along the street. We've worked very closely to and had several conversations with urban design staff about the designs of that kind of first and second floor expression. But we really appreciate Heather's comments about the garage door. And again, something that was also raised by urban design as to how to create that appropriate architecture there. So we are happy to continue to work with staff to refine that component and really make sure that we're incorporating the components necessary to move the project forward. Some other steps that we've taken since you last saw this, of course, the first is along the sidewalk level adjacent to the Grimm Bookbindery. We've replicated that kind of small courtyard inset with a fenced area so that there is some relief in the first floor facade directly adjacent to the Grimm Bookbindery. And then moving back along the bookbinder, we've created an air gap all the way along that facade so that we have a separation between the two buildings. Even though the Grimm Bookbindery is right up to the property line, we've pulled back so that we don't cover all those windows and we create a little bit of breathing room adjacent to the two structures. So that moves all the way through the block and kind of creates that air separation adjacent. Overall, trying to think of any other comments. I suppose one other comment that did come up in the informational presentation was the cantilevered pool component that has been reduced in the most recent submittal. So that does not have as big an architectural element on that top floor. Again, that's entirely on our site. It does not cantilever over the property line. But nonetheless, we did reduce that. I would note that on the call tonight, we also have Bobby Tate, who did intend to register to speak. And if he can have a few seconds to walk through the elevations, I think that would be helpful. But again, we are here requesting approval a recommendation. We really appreciate the staff's input and support the recommendation that she's put forth in front of you tonight. In addition to, as noted, continuing to work with staff to refine the architecture adjacent. So the garage doors, looking at opportunities to create some more visibility and selections of materials adjacent to that is something that we'll continue to work on. So with that, if it's possible, I'll hand it over to Bobby Tate just to touch on a few of the architectural components.
Yeah, that would be fine. It does look like I did get an updated register list and he is on there, so he can go ahead. And then Becky, I see that you have joined us again. So after Bobby is done, I will come back to you. So go ahead, Bobby.
Yes. Thank you, Brian, for the introduction there. Since you covered the massing and the approach we took in the design to the massing of the building and how we're handling the adjacency to the grid book behind your building, I'll speak about the
material. Bobby, I don't know if you're breaking up. I don't know if you're breaking up for anyone else, but
he is.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh no. Y'all can do better now.
Mm-hmm. No,
picking up.
Very staticky.
Sorry about that. How about now? Can y'all hear me better?
Yes.
Yeah, I rebooted my headset. So apologies. So I'll speak here a little more quickly now since it delayed us there with my headset issues about the architectural articulation, particularly on the Gilman Street frontage and how, you know, not only we're using the massing, but we're also using the architecture to tie into the existing context, but also stand out as being a more contemporary building in more historic fabric here. So as Brian mentioned, at the ground level, we've made a conscious effort to pull off and create a court between the Grimbrook Bindery building and the new construction to give that relief, to give that airspace, to give also some natural light to that side of the building. And then we've stepped the building up as we move towards the east on Gilman, carrying the cornice line through in the architectural articulation of the building, using materials that are somewhat contemporary but are similar and more appropriate in scale to those of the Grimbrook Bindery building, using a modular face brick that ties in, using canopies, articulation, a high level of transparency with glass and brass metal elements to again, you know, give more of a contemporary look that fits into this this historic fabric. So, you know, mostly as we then step up, as we move further away from the Grimbrook Bindery building, placing the courtyard there, giving more light, and letting, not overwhelming the mass of that building. I think, you know, for the most part, Brian hit on everything else that we were doing from an architectural standpoint. So with that, I think I'll leave it there and turn it back over to you.
Thank you. I guess, does anyone have any questions for either of the men who spoke prior to me moving on to public register, other public registrant? Seeing no questions, we may come back to you, but we will move on to Rebecca Anderson, registered in opposition, wishing to speak. Becky, can you get yourself unmuted now?
Okay, I don't think she can.
Yeah.
I don't know. Hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yes, we can hear you now.
Just have to keep pushing buttons here.
Sorry about that.
No, that's it's me. Trust me. I am the owner of the Bookbindery, 454 West Gilman. And I don't think it's in contention at all, but I also own 405 North Francis, which is the triangle building on the other side of the now courtyard. And I have some concerns. One is the amount of light that's going to be taken away from the building. It was really bad when they built the hub because it was overshadowing both my buildings. But now this one being so close, there will not be hardly any natural light or sunlight on that side of the building. And I think it's going to deteriorate and damage the integrity of the building because of that. With the roof and the structure and the rest of it. There's also, and it's on the plans, I did see that they found it, that there's they called it a sump pump, but it's not a sump pump, but it is a pump of some kind that is in the parking lot that keeps the rainwater out of the lower level, which has apartments. Those are townhouses in 454 West Gilman Street. Then the other concerns was the amount of traffic, putting the entrance on that side of the building, well, either side, but specifically it's a dead end court. Well, I don't think it's a court, it's a street. And a lot of people don't know that it doesn't go anywhere. And there is a lot of traffic. I've checked with my maintenance staff who works on the properties. And they said, you wouldn't believe the number of cars that come down there, turn around and go back out again. And then there's the bars all around there. And it's just a mecca for a lot of people and a lot of cars that I think that we have enough, especially with the hub. And then with Wando's, with his clientele late at night. But I'm really mainly concerned with the integrity of the building. And I did call in on the phone, and so I did hear some of what Brian said and the other guy. So, and they did, no, it was you that was mentioning the integrity of 454 West Gilman Street. The other thing that enters in here is that I haven't looked into it further, but I'm going to tomorrow. We've been using the driveway that goes to the, I think it's 450 West Gilman Street, the blue house now. And we've been using it for a very long time, so over 20 years. So I'm going to invoke the riparian rights as far as joint ownership of that driveway. But again, I've got to look into that further. I think that's it.
Well, thank you so much. I think as Mayor Rose said at the beginning of this, that some of this falls within our purview and some of it does not. And so we will be kind of commenting on what Landmarks has control over. But if you have any concerns, continue working with city staff and continue attending the various meetings that are specifically about this project.
Okay. And then There's two other items that are at the end of the agenda that were going to be addressed.
The demolitions?
Yes. Then that has to be approved, right? That's what happens today on that?
We, Landmarks, for demos, if it's not a building that is a Madison landmark, Madison Landmarks is only able to give an advisory recommendation to the
right.
Planning Commission on the historic nature of those properties. So we have already, due to the consent agenda, we have already made our approval to find, I apologize, I gotta find my agenda. Agenda items.
There's two at the very, very end.
Yeah, 425 North Francis Street remained on the consent agenda and was passed as part of the consent agenda. 450 West Gilman Street, which is item number 7, was removed and will be discussed as the next agenda item.
Yeah.
And those two buildings face Gilman Street. Does that include, what about, I don't know what the number is, on Francis Street, where the restaurant is, the Portobello.
I believe 425 is behind Portobello, but is not Portobello's, but I could be.
425 North Francis Street is the address for Portobello, but it runs through all the way to Gilman Street. So it has,
And then there, on the other end of that is, at the parking lot that the Blue House has that has the, where the parking, I think that's where the garage entrance is going to be, I think. It's proposed. So, okay. And then I had a couple other things on the email that I sent. So,
yeah.
But we'll address those another time.
Thank you. Yeah. And thank you for your public comment.
Mm-hmm.
We will move on to a discussion and or a motion. I guess Edna, go ahead. I see your hand is up.
I have a question for either the development group or the design team and or the owner. Regarding the comment from the owner about potential limitations of sun and lighting, are there windows on that sort of like connecting wall? It's a wall that's basically adjacent to the new development. Are there windows in the historic property?
Go ahead, Ryan, if you have your hands up.
Yes, windows were added. They actually sit right on the property line. They're not original to the building, but they were added along that facade. And that's why we pulled the building back there to allow those windows to remain.
Got it. Thank you.
Any other questions for the project team? Not seeing any. I guess I would like to... I guess I can start and say that I appreciate this design iteration of the building. I was someone who specifically was not extremely happy about the pool placement. And so I do think that it looks better. I think the step back looks a lot nicer. Aside from that, I agree with Heather's comments about the, about the garage bay. But other than that, I do think that it is a good and a better iteration of design than we saw when we had the first informational meeting. Rich.
Yeah, I agree with those comments. I'd also add that I appreciate them because I don't believe it was in the earlier proposal, making the streets, making those actual commercial spaces on the street. That was all.
Thanks, Rich. Anyone else have any questions, comments, or otherwise I'm looking for a motion?
Yeah, I'll move approval with staff comments to modify the garage door, to work with staff to modify the garage door to make it more or less industrial.
Is there a second? Oh, Molly, is that a second? Oh,
yeah.
Alder Duncan, is that a second? Okay, we'll use Molly as the second. I am going to assume unanimous consent unless I see otherwise, either in your videos or your virtual hands. Seeing none, thank you everybody very much. And we will move on to agenda item number 7. This is Legistar File 90470-450 West Gilman Street. The consideration of a demolition permit to demolish a commercial building. Mary Rose.
Mute myself. There we go. Absolutely. I'm going to share the staff report that Heather Bailey prepared on this property. As noted in the staff report, there's no preservation file for this property. The state file identifies this as the University Hotel, and the architect is listed as unknown, and there are no known historic associations with the building within the records that we have. The building is not architecturally significant. It does retain some historic and architectural integrity, but there's no previously identified and there's also no previously identified archaeology on the property. So that is the staff findings for the property. And based off of those findings, the staff recommended a finding of C, which is no known historic value.
There is one person registered in support of this motion, available to answer questions, and it is actually Brian Munson again. Brian, I don't know if you have anything to add to this before we move on to our discussion and or motion.
No, we agree with the staff report. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, and I believe Molly asked for separation of this due to the email that we received from John Rowling this afternoon, just kind of talking about the... talking about the buildings, integrity and its history as the universe, as potentially the University Hotel, and it potentially being a vernacular building, or as I think Heather likes to call it, a regrettable loss. Correct, Molly? Oh, Molly, you have your hand up.
Yeah, I just thought since we received a comment by email that it was worth recognizing that in our discussion and not keeping it on the consent agenda. And then also the email that I wasn't able to like digest the email that came in right before the meeting started. So I just wanted to make sure everything got full attention. But I do think, yeah, the message from Becky, who we've heard from, is primarily about the construction rather than this demolition. And then as far as the other comment from John Rowling, I guess the first argument about the university did a lot of interesting things in the 1890s and this building was built in 1890 doesn't necessarily for me rise to level of this property having historic significance. And I guess the other question for our group is whether we think documenting the property is worthwhile or worth elevating this to go to plan. Which again, yeah, I guess it's sort of like a balance of resources and time question.
Mary Rose, should you put the demolition standards or criteria back up, or the selection?
Yeah, give me just 1 second. We didn't have a presentation prepared for this one, so I got to snag it out of one other one. Yeah. Give me 1 second.
Yeah, I admittedly could see this being sent over as a B, as though I do feel as though it's like a B minus, in that it is it's a building that, it is an older building that does have a decent amount of integrity and seems like it's in pretty decent shape, all things considering. However, we don't know much about it, that I don't know if doing true documentation of the building is what's needed for something like this.
I personally would just agree with the staff recommendation that there is no known historic value of this property. And I would support that in my thoughts.
Okay. Are you making a motion?
Hold on. Can we just see the recommendations again? Yeah.
Yeah, what's confusing to hear is that B is about like cultural historic value, not the building.
Yeah, I could see an argument for this being important for vernacular, but
I agree. It's hard for me to say that there's no historic value to it.
Right.
I mean, like, it's an intact building built before the turn of the last century. I would be in favor of B.
Okay, well, I do believe we have a motion. I think we brought this up as Alder Duncan was potentially making a motion. Sorry. So I will go back to him and make sure that was a motion, or
I will make a motion that to approve staff recommendation of a finding of C of no known historic value of this property.
Okay. Is there a second for that?
Do you need us to set, if we're going to, we can second and vote against it, right?
Or we can not second it.
Or not second.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know which is better for like procedure.
I think that since there isn't a second, we'll just say the motion failed or the motion doesn't move forward. So then we are looking for a new motion.
I'll move for a finding of B.
Okay.
Just, and again, I get that there's no known historic value, perhaps, but it is, as I mentioned, it's an intact, it looks like to be a relatively intact building built before 1900. And I think we should do something more than say it's of no value.
Yeah, I can understand that. This is, again, to me, this is like a B minus.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, where it's like, it is like, it definitely relates to the vernacular context of the Madison built environment.
Right.
But I need a second then.
I'll second.
Thank you, Molly. I am not going to assume unanimous consent. And I guess I'll do a voice vote just to make sure. Rich?
Aye.
Molly?
Aye.
Alder Duncan?
No.
And Etna?
Yes.
I'm sorry, Etna was not an aye. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. We'll send that over to Plan Commission as a B, but from what it sounds like, we were not also recommending John Rowling's recommendation to document the building. Correct, Rich? Wanted to get that on. Okay.
Correct.
Okay, thank you, everyone. Then we just have one last agenda item under regular business. This is agenda item number 8, the secretary's report, meeting schedule. Am I handing this to Mary Rose or Lauren?
I can take it here. I'll share my screen. Lauren, I believe, already sent out calendar invites for this, didn't you? Yeah, everybody's nodding their head. You got them. Excellent. So this document, if you want like a printable version of this, you also have this. It's also in Legistar if you can't find it. But these are your dates for next year. And then the one thing that we wanted to note is that we are planning on having another single in-person meeting, which is a date that I am trying to remember and I forgot because Heather told me. It was in the spring sometime, I think. Lauren, do you remember what the date was?
Sorry, I had to look it up too. It's May 18th. Yeah. It's another Monday, but yes, it's in person.
Yes, there you go. So please plan on attending one meeting in person. And that's all we have for the administrative report.
Excellent. Then I'm just looking for a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Thank you. And thank you, everyone. Have a lovely November and a great Thanksgiving if you celebrate.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye, everyone.